in the class was that in grammar, then you have the Sanskrit grammar, you're dealing with seven things in any expression of any idea or any thought. That you, six will be nouns and one will be the verb. So in the nouns, you're going to get the subject, who's performing the activity, the object, who it's being performed towards, the result that comes from that, the place and time where it's happening, the cause and the reason why it's come up. Like that. What do we get? Does that get? Oh, and if there's any instruments. What is the instrument in that? So all those are connected to the verb. So by the knowing these, it enhances one's understanding of the verb. And by knowing the verb is there. So what was brought up was that in these questions, the sub-questions, the items under the seventh question, then it was pointed out that these cover all these different aspects of the grammar. When, where, why means when is the time, where is, I mean, so when and where are locative, why would be your, I think what's called accusative? No, ablative. It means what is the cause? Why did it actually even come arise? And we also say, where did you get the inspiration from? So that's also would be ablative. You know, what's the history behind it? Like that. Then how did they recognize Sukadeva? And how did the two of them meet? Because these two are the object and the subject. Right? And then what's being discussed is the Bhagavatam itself. That recitation, that hearing is that. And yeah, and then particulars about then the Maharaj himself, and means what's the cause of these things, and the position, you know, in other words, you have to establish the position of someone to actually discuss. So then his position on why, having everything that he could take care of the people, why would he be giving that up? So there must be some reason. So we see a lot of it's the causative. But that was just pointed out as one of the, how do you say, grammatical approaches.
And the main question is, like, the verb.
Yeah, it's there. So it's, because we see it's Prabhupada will sometimes mention it, but like Gopi Purana Dana Prabhu is telling me, and that, like when he's translating the commentaries for the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, then the, basically everything that's philosophical or those general details like that, those he translates fully. And, you know, puts it in a way that works nicely in English. But he tends to drop all the grammatical explanation. It's just, in other words, it means what has already been said by philosophy, then it's proved through grammar. But one needs to know Sanskrit to, you know, grammar to appreciate that. And we see Prabhupada occasionally uses it when he'll say this word is significant or important. Then you know he's giving a grammatical explanation off of there. And even sometimes they're giving grammatical, we don't know it. Like in the Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami says, Krishna is the supreme subject, Radharani is the supreme object. That's grammatical. So you understand their position by grammar. Because everything's being done by Krishna, but it's being done towards Radharani. But the goal is not Radharani, it's the data which would be the result that would come from Krishna's acting in rasa or in pastimes with Radharani. So many times it's used. So sometimes as time goes and we our course in grammar develops, then you'll all be given the outline form of it, so it'll be more understood so that we can use that more in our discussions. Yes.
Maharaj, is we like the field? Grammar is like the field?
Yeah, but if it's something that's stable that you can always compare something to, that's the idea, is that analogies are for... Yeah.
Like in the English language, in many Western languages, we have the word logic, you know, some, whether English or Spanish.
Logica.
There's always some, so many languages. And this comes from the Greek word logos, which actually means words. So logic is actually means the standard rules for how you use words. So if someone is using words in a crazy way. In other words, he's using words that, in a way that don't match up to their definition and dictionary, or he's using verbs, a verb for one action for some completely different action, then you can no longer follow what he's saying. Sometimes babies, little children talk like that in a cute way, and we laugh, but it's illogical, you see. So this explanation of grammar is actually equivalent to what we in the West call logic.
Logic, yeah. Yeah. It's another, because grammar is logical, and it's also another way of relating the logic, because the logic means when that course is done, we'll also give that, because it has certain elements in it that is just intellectual, that you understand. You want to say something is of standard. So let's say you have to have something to compare it to. So like for us, it's okay, so mother has affection for the child. So she does that through bathing, feeding, dressing, ornamenting, worrying about his, cultural development, everything. So we see in the pastimes Mother Jashoda does that. So it's a standard. Or we can take from the Dharma Shastras, or we can take from, the histories, in Mahabharata you see how somebody's dealt. So there's always a standard. So it's a very important element of broad-mindedness.
Because in Latin, grammatica is the foundation or the floor, the field. Okay. Like grammar in Sanskrit.
Yeah, you could say it's the field, like Krishna says, the field of action, so you have to know what's in it. So action is the important. So as Maharaj mentioned, the actual question, may you please relate the pious message of the Bhagavatam, so that's an activity. So that's the verb is the real important thing. But to appreciate that, then why it's there, where it came from, who's talking, what's actually involved in the verb. So in the Vedic concept, action is the real thing. Because inaction to Krishna is not important, because his Atmarama, he's inactive and he's satisfied. But he expands himself to create pastime of action. And so, therefore, the Abhideya for Krishna is the most important.
It's funny that you so often read, ordinary Hindus, when they're trying to explain their religion to non-Hindus. Mm-hmm. I've seen it so many times. They say the principle, or the main principle of our Hindu religion is karma, which means action.
Yeah.
Of course, that's material action, but it's interesting. It just came to mind from what you said. And Prabhupada used to sometimes describe devotional service as Krishna karma, work that is aimed at Krishna. So even in devotional service, the verb, the activity is foremost.
That's why Govindaji is prominent. Rupa Goswami is the prominent Aracharya. Because one would think that Gopinath, the Acharya there would be the prominent, Madhu Pandit or Raghunath Das, but it's not, it's Rupa, because it's the activity. Because actually, Sambandha and Prayojana are the feeling or the experience you get from the activity. But the activity is what generates it. So if the activity is not there, it doesn't generate the other two.
In Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada gives the example of Dharuka. Lord Krishna is one of his assistants, and he's fanning Krishna with chamra.
Yeah.
And then that ecstasy, which is the prayojan, becomes so strong that his hand begins to shake, and there's threat that he may drop the chamra in Krishna's presence and the whole service. But then he would control himself.
Mm-hmm.
So in this way, the Abhideya principle overrides the prayojan in the devotee, so that the service will continue.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's his position. I am servant. And it's the servants want to see the Lord enjoy the prayojan.
That's it. So that's it'll be. So you just it's one more way of comparing something to a standard. Because we mentioned before, broad-mindedness means I have a fixed standard, but I can accommodate any wide variety of range of people's distance from that standard. Because I will relate to them in a way that will gradually bring them to that standard. That's very, very different than being liberal. Liberal is I don't have a fixed standard. And as the wind blows, my standard changes. So it's not actually liberal, because it's whatever is the standard today, it's that narrow. It's not actually broad. So they're not really liberal. All it means is that conservative means you have a fixed standard and you're narrow-minded, and liberal means you have an unfixed standard and you're narrow-minded. So broad-minded is actually the only thing where you have a fixed standard and you can accommodate wherever everybody is. So therefore, Prabhupada could walk into, you know, Hashbury and sit down with all these, you know, potheads and deal with them very normal, because he knows if they just chant, take prashad, then gradually they'll come to the point of there, you know, or 26 second hour in the Bowery, all these crazy people. He could accommodate, but it did not change the standards. So grammar becomes one way of associating the philosophical point or culture point with the standard. So it's just, that's the importance of it. Yes?
Right, the way you present grammar seems like it's just like as absolute as mathematical laws.
Yes.
All place in the universe, even in the spiritual world.
Yes.
So, but then who would be the deity behind the grammar? Who is that person?
Who's the deity behind the grammar is Narayan.
Narayan?
Yeah, means Jiva Goswami mentions that. The first verse of the Harinamrita Vyakaran is Narayanad Udbhuto Yam Varna Kramaha, that the varnas, the letters, come from Narayana. Like that. And so that's the standard. So what we use is Jiva Goswami's grammar, because that's Narayana's Sanskrit grammar. Panini is Shiva's Sanskrit grammar. Like that. There's 8 Sanskrit grammars in the universe. So Narayan, Shiva, I think Yamaraj has all the major persons like that. They all have their own angle. You know, it's like a dialect. You know, like you have British English and American English, Australian. It's all English, but there's like that. So the origin is Narayan's. So we use that. But it's an absolute standard, because these are all the things of action. There has to be someone performing an action towards somebody with an instrument, it will give a result in a time and place, and there's a cause that they took it up. You know, so
the word grammar is vyakarana.
Vyakarana.
Vyakarana is doing action.
Yeah. It all goes off of krit. The means that the kridantas means all the things that are connected to the verb that perform the basis of the action. That's elements that's given, is that all the elements of grammar actually most all have krit as its root, so they're all connected with action. Because when, this is a side thing, is when sound, when you conceive of it, the word or the point you want to say, it starts resonating in the Muladhara chakra. Then from there it rises, because sound goes up. As it comes to the third chakra, that's where visualization takes place, so you actually see it and what will be done. So it's actually a verb. The concept that you take first takes on the thing of the verb, because that's what's being done. Then when it rises to the heart, then it takes on the nature of the elements that are actually going to do it. The nouns manifest. Then when it rises up to the voice chakra, then it comes out of your mouth and you say it. But that's actually metaphysically how sound works. So every noun and concept starts off as a verb, like that. So that's the important element. So it's, you know, chit is that's your knowledge and activities. So that's why the two go together. Maharaj was very strong that this course should not just be academic exercise, because it's only half of the chit potency. The other half is actually application in the culture and satsanga with the devotees. Then it's actually, you get the benefit of the chit potency. Because when those two are combined with devotion, which is from Hladini, then the Sandini potency then gives realization. That's why for the non-devotees, they don't get any realization, because the bhakti and activity aren't there. So you have the knowledge, you have the activity, you have the devotion. Those three combined will give you realization. Like that. So it's important. Because before, our concept of this course was much more academic. Maharaj felt that that's not going to be very useful to the devotees. Nice intellectual exercise, but it should, the satsang should be there. That so idea is to like even of the presentations, it's understood that in the beginning people aren't going to be confident. The presentations may catch so many points, may not catch. But it's at least starting that satsang and that interaction, and then we can discuss on it so that one is able to sit in a group of devotees, express themselves, discuss it, and it's not just a didactic kind of thing of this one said this and no but this and then trying to establish your point. No, it's a matter of it doesn't matter. Someone can give a presentation, it can be terrible. It doesn't matter. They're making that endeavor to study and express what they understand from it. And then from that you use that as a point or a springboard that everybody else can then, what they've come. Because I've had so many, like when Prahlad was speaking, then Maharaj was speaking, then to me it came up that, oh, there's these aspects. Because in the beginning it seemed that there's the questions, the first chapter. Then Prahlad brings up the point, but there's the introduction. That's its own, the Mangalacharan, the invocation of the book is unique on its own. Like that. And then in doing that, then I also saw that there, Maharaj had brought out that there is the qualifications of one to hear it. So you get the Mangalacharan, then you got the qualifications to hear Bhagavatam, then you had the questions on which it was based. So from their discussing, then I saw that there are actually three very clear, you know, interactive parts. But that only came up from the discussion. Like that. So that's the importance of, you know, they hate churning, you know, it's like...
This is all being recorded, and every time you go around
the class,
yeah, it'll get
more and more,
more and more.
The realization, like a avalanche, just getting bigger and bigger in the class.
Yeah. Okay, so, enough.
You're on.
We won't have like 20 minutes?
If I take 20 minutes?
You want to take,
20 minutes? Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead. Maybe some at the end.
Thank you.
Sorry, before you start, is there any possibility of questions from last class, yesterday's class? I have a question, but there was no time for questions yesterday.
Well, if he speaks for 20 minutes, there'll be time.
Yeah.
For questions, plenty of time.
Yeah. But if not, if there's a thing, always let us know in the beginning if there is, because we can always start off with the questions, because the discussion is more important. We're not fixed, tied to it. We have to finish this many chapters this week and that. This thing will move, because every time you do it, sometimes there'll be more discussion on this chapter. Next time around we have the course, there won't be any discussion. It'll be on another chapter. So for us, that's important. So he's prepared, so we'll do that, and then we'll go back to
him. Okay, thank you. So we will look at the chapter 5 today briefly, and I was thinking that myself probably I'm the least qualified person to do it in the first place, because English is not my mother's tongue, and this verse from chapter 5 number 11, Tadvad Visarga Janatakha Viplavo Yasmin Pratishlokam Abhavatavatyati, very much applies to me, because I cannot present the matter in an adequate way because of the language and because of my spiritual immaturity. But the subject matter is so appealing that I hope it will still make an impact. So, Chapter 5 is entitled Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam for Vyasadeva, and it consists of 40 verses, and it describes wonderful interaction between Narada and Vyasadeva, and it starts from Narada Muni seating himself comfortably in Vyasadeva's ashram. You can visualize the picture. And then Narada Muni starts speaking. One important point in here, as Maharaj is mentioning often, that we have different aspects to Srimad Bhagavatam. One is knowledge, philosophy aspect. Another one is cultural aspect. And of course the topmost aspect is devotional aspect. And oftentimes it is seen that culture, being related to karma, is least important aspect, and it is meant for, you know, understanding some deeper things. So apparently jnana is superior to karma, but actually from this chapter we will understand that what Narada Muni will be stressing, explaining to Vyasadeva, that actually karma or culture, we can say, when it is applied with the idea to please the Lord, then it actually becomes the highest thing we can get. So this connection is there. And of course, I mean, yeah, from this point of view, the very description is very important for us in terms of Abhidaya, in terms of applying, because what is depicted in here is perfect reciprocation between first-class disciple and first-class spiritual master. This is something we should be aspiring for. And so in this sense, all the elements, there is nothing unimportant. So, and there are two questions, basically, in this chapter. Narada Muni is asking one, we could say, a little bit sarcastic question to Vyasadeva, and the question is appearing in text, is it text 2 or 3? Text 2, it is appearing that whether... Are you satisfied with identifying body and mind as object as self-realization? You can say it's tinged with sarcasm, this question. And Vyasadeva then replies that I don't really feel satisfied, and this is why I'm requesting you to please identify what is the problem, why I'm not satisfied. And he's saying, please find out what is the deficiency in me. So this is perfect interaction. And actually, you know, the standard we, you know, can relate better, that guru is the one who is right away telling disciple that you should be doing this and that. Well, one thing in here is that there is no such thing as guru, because guru is a disciple, and he is a perfect disciple. And then when disciple achieves perfection, he becomes, you know, he is acting in the position of a guru. But nevertheless, even then, you know, disciple, you know, position of disciple is permanent position. And guru is just a name for a perfect disciple, that's all. And this is why we have only this one thing, disciples. That's it. And then Narada Muni, being very sensitive, and he is posing, you know, he's diagnosing what is the problem of Vyasadeva only after he completely convinced that this is what Vyasadeva is prepared to hear, and this is why the instructions will benefit him in the best way. So we can see very fine manifestation of spiritual culture in here. And Vyasadeva is requesting Narada Muni to find out the deficiency. He's ready for this maybe very heavy feedback from his spiritual master. And then in order to confirm it, he's actually glorifying in next two verses Srila Vyasadev. He's in the verse 6, he's pointing out his position as topmost devotee. And then in the verse 7, he's actually saying, what does it mean? Because if we just say, oh, you're, you know, to somebody, you're so great, but we don't say why, what is the qualification, why person is so great, it's just a flattery. So for glorification to be there, we should also be able to explain what is it that we appreciate in a person. And this is why in the verse 7, Narad Muni, Vyasadeva is pointing out that you are such a great devotee because you are free and you are omniscient, practically as the Supreme Lord. So this is your greatness. And then, starting from the verse 8, Narad Muni is giving his instructions. Narada informs Vyasa about the importance of directly describing glorious pastimes of Krishna. He also tells him the dangers that could arise due to Vyasa's previous writings, which only indirectly hint at the glories of the Lord. And the very beginning of Narada Muni's instruction is also extremely important for us in terms of application, because Narada Muni is... And verse 9 also, Srila Prabhupada gives very important points in the purport. He says, well, basically, he's pointing out that the main point we should avoid in discharge of our devotional service, it also can be applied to us, focusing anything on anything rather than Krishna consciousness. Basically, focusing on either karma or jnana aspect, leaving aside Krishna consciousness as such. And Srila Prabhupada points out in a purport to text 9 that main deficiency was deliberate avoidance of glorifying the Lord. Mm. Like that. So we can say that this is the principle, you know, two initial points in Bhakti Yoga approach, as in yoga we have Yama and Niyama, rules and regulations. So the thing to avoid would be to fail to glorify the Lord. And the main point is to always glorify the Lord. Like that. So, and then when proceeding with his instructions, he is pointing out that, this verse 11 is also very potent. I mean, so many amazing verses in this chapter, but Dattvat Visarga Janataka Viplava, we mentioned in the beginning, it is saying Viplava, if Krishna consciousness applied with full understanding how karma and jnana interlinked with bhakti in preaching, in presenting Krishna consciousness to the people, it will create Viplava, revolution. So, I mean, you know, that in Prabhupada times, at least from what we heard, there was a very strong spirit of revolution, changing the world through Krishna consciousness. But after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, somehow this spirit sort of faded a bit, and because of so many different things. So it is very important for us, on the basis of this chapter, to re-establish this spirit, not on a sentimental basis. Yes, here we will, you know, conquered the whole world in 18 days or something like that, but to understand actually how to approach to this matter scientifically and to actually do it. So as it was pointed out in the introduction, that we are not expected just to become armchair philosophers, but we are expected to do something with this knowledge, to basically preach it to everybody and make impact on the worldwide society on a massive scale. This is what is expected, and I hope that I am right on this one. So, and in the verse 12, Narada Muni is giving a little hint that basically karma and jnana are useless without bhakti, without Krishna consciousness. And then he elaborates on this point directly and very strongly. He emphasizes this point in verse 35, so there is a connection between these two verses there. And then Narada Muni is stressing another point, explaining to Srila Vyasadeva the power of bhakti, because some people may say, you know, bhakti is difficult, so there may be a fall downs, there may be difficulties in the pursuit, but then Narada Muni is saying that there is no disqualifications for bhakti, that even if somebody falls down, then it's not a problem because Krishna is always taking care of a devotee, and Srila Prabhupada is giving very nice analogy of orphan and prince, that they both, you know, prince may do something wrong and he may be chastised by a king, but this is for his good and eventually benefits him, whereas orphan is just suffering with, you know, with no real, you know, without any benefit, basically. So, then, after describing the Lord as both impersonal as well as personal, Narada asked Vyasa to vividly and directly describe the pastimes of Krishna. This is texts 20 to, through 22. Text 20 explains, basically, you know, this sequence is very important, that in the text 20, Narada Muni is saying that, who is the Lord? He is saying that the Lord is everything. And what does it mean, he is everything? He is creator, maintainer, and annihilator. This is how it translates. And then, basically, he is pointing out to Vyasadeva, please describe the Lord along with his connection with everything. Don't just describe pastimes. Don't just start with the 10th canto. Explain everything. How Lord is connected with this world and how everything in this world should be utilized for the service of the Lord. With examples, this is what Bhagavatam does. Then, text 21, he is asking him to please describe the Lord. And then, text 22, he is telling him how to do it. Basically, he's, I'll just read the verse so that you have clear understanding. Learned circles have positively concluded that the infallible purpose of the advancement of knowledge, namely austerity, study of the Vedas, sacrifice, chanting of hymns and charity, culminates in the transcendental descriptions of the Lord, who is defined in choice poetry. So basically, he's giving exact recipe how to do it. Narada Muni is very clear what he wants from Vyasadeva, you know. Then he of course, glorifies Vyasadeva. He is telling that, you know it all, I'm just hinting, but nevertheless, main points he is outlining in a very graph, you know, in a very clear and solid way, like that. That you explain how to utilize everything, whatever is given in the Vedas as cultural aspects or karma in the service of the Lord, like that. And in this way, Lord will be glorified. Mm. And then, just to encourage Vyasadeva, just to convince him that this is not just theoretical, you know, the results of developing bhakti is not a theory, what he is giving as an example. Anybody remembers? Anybody read the chapter? What he is giving as an example that bhakti is not a theory, that it's actually working. Yes, he is giving his own life history, so he describes his own life history that as an example of somebody who benefited from performing bhakti, and he's basically saying at the end of the chapter, look, I'm completely free, I can do whatever I want, I'm, you know, free to go here and there glorifying the Lord. This is, you know, this is the result, this is what you can get. Immortality, complete freedom, happiness, anything. So, no karma, no jnana can give these results alone without bhakti. Mm. So, and then, in next texts, these are also very important texts, Narada glorifies working in Krishna's service while remembering his glories. Text 32 through 36. And this is actually what the main point is about, that basically it's more or less the same point what Krishna is bringing out in Bhagavad Gita, explaining Arjuna what are the connections, how you can connect everything and utilize everything in the Lord's service. So basically he's explaining all the principles of Yukta Vairagya, and this is very much stressed by Srila Prabhupada in his purpose as well. Like that. So then, after glorifying transcendental sound, Narada then requests Vyasa to directly glorify the Lord's activities for the benefit of suffering humanity. These are very important points also. He's saying that let's glorify the Lord along with all his expansions. Text 37, you know, specifically he mentions Chaturvyuha. And then text 38, he's saying, thus he is the actual seer who worships in the form of transcendental sound representation, the Supreme Personality of God at Vishnu, who has no material form. So Narada Muni very much stressing sound, basically chanting and preaching, two things, or discussion amongst devotees. So sound, he's saying that sound is the most important aspect in bhakti. And Srila Prabhupada makes very important points in the purport, and I'm sure that in discussion of our teacher, you know, and that our teachers would probably also say something about it, that text 38 in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that we should be engaged in the Lord's service in two ways, that our gross body should be engaged in the Lord's service and our subtle body should be engaged in the Lord's service as well. And then he's explaining how to do it as well. Also, that our gross body should be engaged in the process of deity worship and our subtle body should be engaged in hearing, chanting and remembering the Lord. And of course, subtle body in the human form of life is much more important than gross body. And this is why the description of Prahlad Maharaj starts with Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, from, you know, processes of devotional service meant for developing subtle body, spiritualizing subtle body, and then he's going into Padasevanam, Archanam, and all these things like that. Or gross body, because gross body naturally follows subtle body. But both should be engaged. This is the point Srila Prabhupada is making in a purport. And he's making very important point. He's saying that Pancharatrika, he's stressing Pancharatrika, two points he's making, that Pancharatrika is very practical and suitable, specifically, he says, for this age of quarrel. Basically, if we worship the Lord properly, there will be no problems with anybody. There will be no grudges or anger or anything like that. And then he is saying, on this basis, that Pancharatrika, for this age, is more important than Vedanta. It's quite a revolutionary statement. And then in the text 39, just, you know, as a final encouragement for us to take up this service, he is saying that, O Brahmana, thus by the Supreme Lord Krishna, I was endowed first with the transcendental knowledge of the Lord as inculcated in the confidential parts of the Vedas, then with the spiritual opulences, and then with his intimate loving service. So three benefits which coming from performing our devotional service. First benefit is jnanam, not just theoretical knowledge, but realized. Jnana vijnana triptatma kutosta vijitendriyata. This is what Bhagavad Gita explains. And Srila Prabhupada is saying, in order to develop this proper understanding what devotional service is, then offenses should be avoided at any cost. And then next, what is coming, if we develop this understanding, then Aishwaryam, everybody wants to be rich in this world, and real opulence is not money or anything, but abilities, good abilities. And of course, best if they used in devotional service, and specifically Srila Prabhupada is mentioning Ashtasiddhi, eight mystic perfections. And these are coming in the matter of developing in devotional service, one becomes endowed with 8 mystic perfections also. Not only mystic yogis get it, but devotees as well. And then, eventually, the topmost benefit is bhavam. And basically, it is explained that this is when devotee becomes entrusted with specific service to the Lord. You know, we all heard that we're all supposed to have a mission in our lives. So this is what we're getting eventually. Very special and very inspiring mission, which we can execute forever without changing the body. So, like that, this is... and then... He's repeating in the last text again the request. Please describe the glories of the Lord. And then why? Because the glories of the Lord will help people. They will satisfy the hankering of great learned men and at the same time mitigate the miseries of the masses of common people who are always suffering from material pangs. Indeed, there is no other way to get out of such miseries. So, as compassionate devotee Narad Muni is always thinking of the benefit of everybody, and he knows what will benefit everyone in the best way. Thank you.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you. By your mercy. I just repeated what I heard from you.
Yeah, the it's very nice that Uttama Shloka Prabhu brought our attention to this couplet of verses, texts 11 and 12. They're often quoted by Srila Prabhupada. So text 11, it's text 10 and 11. Yes. Text 10 and 11. So this is like if Prabhupada once, in explaining the yoga system, the first two principles are yam yam, and he explain them as do's and don'ts. There are basic things you do and basic things you don't do in order to make any further progress in yoga. And so text 10 represents the basic don't in Bhagavad Dharma. Nayad vachyas chitraparam herat yasho. Those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for crows. Since the all-perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive any pleasure there. So, I've seen old, I don't know if it's still used in present publications, but there's an old BBT picture. You see the inside of some Karmi bookstore, and you see some strange looking characters with dark faces pulling through the books and someone's choosing novel, someone's choosing self-help book, someone's choosing book on better sex life and all kinds of things. And so they're shown in this picture to be just like crows on a heap of garbage. But we don't have to just talk about books. It actually begins, Maharaj was speaking, a very esoteric point about how verb begins. This is the explanation of the four levels of sound. So the verb begins, this is paravya, is it not? Paravak. And is beginning down in the Muladhara Chakra. And then becomes, what is it? Pashanti, Madhyama, and then finally the vocalized Shabda. Yes. So It's interesting that verb. So what does that mean? It means actually desire. You see? And the Hridaya Granta, that thing that hard knot in the heart, is the basic principle why we're all here in the material world. Because we want to be. We want to be. That's also verb. That's our basic desire. We want to be Krishna. We don't want to serve Krishna. We want to be Krishna. And so that is being verbalized by our own vacha. You see? Na yad vachas. So vacha here is translated as vocabulary. But it's very similar to this English word voice. You see? Vacha, voice, you can hear. And there in many other languages, I think. At least in this... what they call the Indo-European line of languages, which includes Germanic, Romantic, and Slavic, at least. You'll find words similar to this, voice, vacha. So in other words, in what we speak, this applies. Not only what is coming out of our mouth, but speech is first enunciated, vibrated in the mind. So thought is just the subtlest form of speech. Because just as I am sitting here, speaking to you, so there's also some very fast computer calculations going on up here in my brain, what to say next. So like that, even our thoughts can be judged by these two verses, 10 and 11. So, if one has an attraction, you see, we see this. How shall I say it? We see this too often in ISKCON. This is, I like, but Uttamashloka Prabhu said, that when Prabhupada was here, there was a revolutionary spirit, and there definitely was. I remember that, and Maharaj remembers that. We were all that generation which chose to follow Srila Prabhupada. We were already in some kind of tamasic revolutionary mood. Total rejection of anything we had learned from our parents or teachers or standards of society. We just, some even violently rejecting, some, you know, there were in that youth movement, there were different forms of expressing that, and some were even exploding bombs. You know, they'd become anarchists or nihilists.
The SDS.
The what were they called? The Weatherman faction. I belong to that, actually. And Mao Zedong is our acharya. Anyway, I don't want to talk about that. A really dark time of my life. So, we believed, but that was the thing we used to shout. The only way out is to kill as many pigs as you can. Pigs meaning policemen or figures of authority. So, anyway, how did I get on that subject?
Revolutionary spirit.
So, and as Mario so nicely said, Prabhupada, so lotus-like, sat in the midst of all this madness, and he plucked out the essence, Diplava, as you pointed out. Yes, there is the human form of life. It is created for that. That is the human mission, to change from materialism, because we always used to talk about materialism. But we ourselves could not recognize that we, representing perhaps the worst form of materialism of all.
The revolution was to make it go down, so that it was elevated.
So Prabhupada actually was able to bring forth the real revolution, revolution of spirit against matter, and that begins with the sound vibration, the vacha, the thoughts, the desires, which are rooted in our desire. So, if one continues maintaining that desire to be Ishwara, to be the Lord, to be the enjoyer, controller, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. What is that? The peace formula?
Bhoktaram.
Bhoktaram, yes. Bhoktaram, enjoyer. Bhoktaram, jagya tapasam, the one who receives the results of other people's sacrifice. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, and the Lord of everything. So if desires, those principal aspects of Krishna are our desires, rooted deeply in our heart, that I want to be Bhoktaram, I want to be an enjoyer, and I want others to do tapasya and sacrifice for my benefit. And I want to be the Lord of everything, you see. Then there will be disturbance, even in the society of devotees, you see. So we can see it on so many levels. We've had unfortunate incidents at the very top of our ISKCON society where persons who were honored as having achieved perfection suddenly were revealed as having, still maintaining these desires in the heart. But even, we say the rank and file, the ordinary, among ordinary devotees, sometimes, you know, just cock an ear as you walk by a group of devotees as they're eating their pizza. What they're talking about. Are they talking about Krishna? You see? What are they laughing about? And you see it. So, I'm not trying to say this in any accusative or accusatory way, because I'm just as guilty as everyone else. But here, this is Narada Muni, this is Mahabhagavata, this is Mahajan. And he's reminding us all the basic don't and then do. That is the next verse. On the other hand, that literature was full of descriptions of the transcendental glories, of the name, fame, forms, pastimes, etc., the limited Supreme Lord. Is a different creation. It's completely different. Although it is also vacha, it is also speech, it is also an expression of desire, first in thought and then sound vibration, audible sound vibration. But the result is that it will bring about this viplava, this revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. And one of my godbrothers, years ago, he actually proposed that this verse was a prediction of Srila Prabhupada's appearance, because it so nicely fits. As you said, you were saying about yourself coming from a non-English-speaking land, so you kind of apologized that you may not be able to express yourself so perfectly. Your presentation may be imperfectly composed, but the purified persons who we are all trying to be, we appreciated it so much. Therefore, there was applause. And those who are not, you see, this honest, sadhava, you see the word sadhu, we normally think of sadhu as meaning saintly person, but actually one of the prime meanings is honest, an honest person. So it means a sadhu can appear dressed in a business suit. A sadhu can appear in different forms. But if, like Prabhupada himself, I remember one devotee was coming to Prabhupada to confess the reason for his, you know, I'm having so many problems in Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada. Very difficult to control my mind. This was in the early days. And Prabhupada was very sympathetic and said, what is your difficulty? Well, Prabhupada, you see, and he was beginning to cry and, like confession, you know. You see, Prabhupada, before I was devotee, I was a drug dealer. And Prabhupada said, oh yes, I was also working in that field. Because he was a druggist. And did you know that Prabhupada was once actually arrested and brought before a court because an assistant of his sold some morphine to someone who didn't have the proper prescription. An addict came into Prabhupada's pharmacy and actually purchased. So Prabhupada was saying, yes, I was also in that business myself. So see, Prabhupada was using it. Just as you said, Narada used himself as the example, so Prabhupada was using himself. See what I have become, so you may also become. Follow this prescription in text 11. You see? And then for that there must be purpose, there must be drive, there must be desire. You see, desire is probably, this is mystic yoga, but it is very relevant. How desire is manifesting up gradually and becoming more and more, how shall we say, coherent. Mm-hmm. As it is first appearing, it is incoherent. It is something, you see, we before desire manifests, sometimes we just feel something's happening. I'm not, you know, we're tuned in to something new is coming, or I'm not satisfied with the way things are now, something can change. That's what it was like in the late 50s, early 60s. I remember that. There was just among the youth some just general dissatisfaction. Rock and roll music was coming. Something is happening. And then suddenly the Beatles came and the Rolling Stones came and everyone started to grow their hair and become crazy. That's what everyone was waiting for. Become insane. So somehow deep in ourselves we have to generate this urge. We can call it urge. An urge for Krishna consciousness. Somehow we have to catch that up. You see? And that should be our motivation. And then everything will follow. That's what Prabhupada said in his final days. That one has to, I mean, in Vrindavan, when he was preparing to leave, this was one of his instructions, his final instructions. One has to catch the mood of the spiritual master. I think this is this word mood, very similar to the word urge. Mood. You see? Mood is something very, sometimes it's very, you can't put it into words, but it is, you feel it. A mood. You can walk into a room and nobody's saying anything. There's nothing, you know, logical, no logical reason why you should maybe feel a little fearful or a little, you know, relieved, relaxed, but there's a mood that you can feel. So, Prabhupada said, we must catch the mood of our spiritual master, and then everything will follow. And so these two verses are so extremely important. Anyway, it's 9 o'clock.
We can do, we can Monday start with the questions that he has on fourth or fifth chapter.
Yes, we'll that's a good idea. Questions. I think we should have a day.
Yeah.
Open for questions because this is also something building up. And one day burst, there will be a revolution here in this assembly too.
Yeah, because the whole point is that the course is based on questions. There's no time to question.
And we have, now it's 9 o'clock, I just want to announce we have the weekend essay. There are actually two different types of enrollees. So if you're a full-time enrollee, this is what you get, the big one. And if you're part-time, you get the small one. So I've done this to make sure you understand to which category you belong. Just to get that very clear. So the definition of full-time is at the top of each one. And then the question. So make sure you take the question that is suitable to you. And remember, of course, if you've just come here to listen only, your auditor, then you're not eligible for any of this printed material because you're not paying. All this costs us too. Therefore, we ask that modest sum. So if you're just here for the first time just to hear what's going on, please don't take any of these questions because we've printed them according to those who have signed the enrollment sheet and paid their fees. And anyone, there's one person I'll not name, embarrassed by naming, who handed in his question rather late, his answer to the last week's essay rather late, Monday evening after I'd stopped grading them. So I want to see that person do this weekend's essay, hand it in on time, Monday morning. If you do that, then I will grade also your last week's essay without any discredit for it being late. But if next week's, if this Monday you're again late, you'll get no credit for either essay. I promise you that. You'll be discounted as having missed two essays. So we're trying to help you, but you know there's a cutoff point. There's a limit to how much we can do. Okay? Anything else, Maharaj? No? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Again, remember, Kashi Mishra Prabhu is the secretary who has these essays, so you come to him.
This is why.